Today is Monday, December 8th, 2014, and we have a world to do, so we're beginning a minute early just to tell a story. I went to Menachem Avil. Abby Shimron was born Abe Shmukla, Philadelphia boy. Went to public school, became a Baal Tshuva, Bnei Akiva. When he graduated high school, he's 2 years two years older, he died at 70, a year and a half older than I am. When he graduated high school, he was the top baseball player in Philadelphia. 423 or 424 batting average, was a third baseman. And he was offered every type of scholarship, baseball scholarship. The number two and number three went on to long baseball careers. But Shabbos Kashrut, he couldn't handle, couldn't take it. So he went on to become a mathematician, and he came in Aliyah on the boat with us. We are on the same boat, same date. Whenever you write something here, you give your two birth dates, when you were born physically and when you were born spiritually. So we both, spiritual birth, July 5th, 1969. And he told, we used to meet in Machon Levy's, the sit down with him, we go through baseball, he had memorabilia, it's a whole story. Let me even continue the story for the sake of what people are like in this world. Welcome. This is the jokes before the class, the Milad B'dichatai. Sit here, this is Yomo, a very famous student, born in the Ukraine, educated in the Ukraine, comes to America, chapten by Camp Morasha, and will soon have smicha from Yeshivas Reb Yitzchak Elchanan, and he may even meet with Putin. He's a little bit upset with the Rebbe because the Rebbe loves Putin, he doesn't, but we'll leave that be. Anyway, he is teaching at Machon Lev, talking about Abby Shimron, Abe Shmukla. He married a Bronx girl, and he had four boys and a girl. And Lo Aleinu, his daughter, who was my daughter's student in Chorev before she went into study to become a Tohenet, and a 12, 13-year-old girl came down with a tumor, and she died. Abby never got over it, but to get away from the Atlas Nefesh, he took a sabbatical, and he went back to Temple University, where he, what Temple or U of P, well, one of the big universities in Philadelphia. When he was there that year, the people knew his background, the baseball, and what he gave up. Those of you who are my age will recall the Detroit Tigers had a third baseman, George Kell. Naming anything to you, he's in the Hall of Fame. I think a lifetime 303 hitter, an excellent fielder. And George Kell was a lay preacher in his Protestant church, some form of Protestantism. And they told George Kell about Professor Shimron, who's like a rabbi, learned, observant, and the tragedy he had. And you should know that this George Kell befriended him and met with him, gave him pictures of all the Hall of Famers. It seems they exchange every year signed pictures, autographed pictures. And he did everything to make Abby happy. So it shows you that Rekefet is right. You cannot teach hatred of non-Jews. Among them, there are tzaddikim and chassidim. Okay, now, today is Monday. I just gave the date a minute ago. I want to say hello to my students sitting in front of me and to all those listening across the wide expanse of the universe. A few comments that I want to make before I roll. The world is shaking, our world is shaking, and we're sitting here calmly. Among other things, I have to apologize. Yomo, who's a Noheg Yisrael, if you recall last week, I went crazy with that advertisement in, what was it, Bamishpacha, about that book that came out to give you peace of mind, no anxiety. Can a Jew really live with no anxiety? I quoted to the Rav, from the Rav, and Yomo told me not to be upset with Rabbi Ashira, if I'm pronouncing it right. How do you pronounce it? A-S-H-E-A-R. He said the publicity of Bamishpacha, article, putting in the ad, made it sound worse than it is. But he gave me a copy of one of his shayurim, which are evidently in the book. And what he's trying to do is to teach you how to live with your anxieties. So, Yomo, I apologize and I accept the invitation. Secondly, the story we told about Albert Einstein and Reb Shmuel Belkin, Rabbi Rubin told the story about the student that Rabbi Belkin brought to meet Rabbi Dr. Professor Einstein. His name is Samuel Donashevsky. And if you, he was a genius of geniuses. He's a grandson of the Slabodka Rav. I believe his grandfather's name was Reb Moshe Donashevsky, if I'm not mistaken. Was Slabodka Rav was a Gaon Adir. And he was a musmach of the yeshiva, one of the Rav's top students. Later went into science. He didn't win a Nobel Prize, but I know he was a candidate for a Nobel Prize. Okay? Regarding the story of how we got this campus, in English it was Samuel Donashevsky, Shmuel. We knew him Shmuel, Samuel. The story is anecdotal. Whether it's true or not, I can't vouch. I wasn't there, but it makes sense. What we spoke about BMT, how we got the campus. So Rabbi Mark Dratch, my dear student, the executive vice president of RCA today. So Mark wrote to me, I remember sleeping in the sicker at BMT in 1977. We were awakened early in the morning to the sound of scaffolding being erected on the side of the building. Couldn't imagine how such a thing could happen during Chol HaMoed. Turns out they needed to engrave the names of Caroline and Joe Griss on the side of the building. We figured that such activity was certainly permissible, as it probably constituted a very significant davar avud. Either he or his assistant were coming to inspect. And I would say yes. Hefsed Meruba says it all. Okay, I believe those are the... And we spoke about Rav Gerelich last week, and Rav Yeruchim and his volatile personality. A student of his, Leon Glasner, who is evidently listens to the website, a virtual student. So here is a Talmud of Rav Yeruchim Gerelich. So he tells the following story: a mishulach with a long beard and long black coat came into the classroom to collect from us and presented his papers to Rav Gerelich. Rav Gerelich looked at him and said, "These boys are not apikorsim." The Mishulach was a bit startled and said, "I never said they were." And without a second's delay, Rav Gerelich responded, "Ibidikta." So what he's telling you here is that Rav Yeruchim Gerelich, this Mishulach came in, he was Malamet slipping the Talmidim. The Mishulach looked at the boys, they looked the way I look, the way Yitz looks. Our generation was different than your generation. Today, if you see a student with a beard, you know he's a Talmud. The Rebbeim are without beards, the students are with beards. Baruch Hashem. So Rav Yerelik told the Mishulach, don't get upset, they're not Apikosim, they're frum boys. So the Mishulach said, I didn't say the Apikosim. So Rav Gerelich gave him a shtuch. He said, Ibigitrach, yeah, you thought it over, you realized they're not Apikosim. But he ends off, however, Rav Gerelich was a critical part of my education, exposing me to his experiences in Rotten and Brisk and sharing with us his Torah from the Gedolim of Europe, focusing us on Pshatn the Sugya as a prerequisite to fancy Lundische Torah from Reb Chaim et al. No dessert before eating your vegetables. So that's part of our discussion last week, quoting my cousin, Rabbi Revel. I need more Malamdin in the yeshiva and less Rashi yeshiva. And finally, the world is shaking. An article came out by my student, David Golinkin. If you recognize the name, he studied with me in BMT on Rehovah Baben Eliyot. He was the grandson of a member of the Beis Din in Boston, a Litvish Talmud Chacham. His father was a conservative rabbi, a graduate of JTS. And David Golinkin went to JTS, and he heads up their branch here, Shechter, as it's called, in the right behind Neve Shechter, in that area, right behind the museum. And he has fought bitter battles with the conservative movement. I don't want to go into detail, but for years he stalled recognizing, I don't want to even mouth the word, but forget it, you'll understand, accepting them as students, and that's perfectly legitimate, man, woman, etc., etc. Fought big battles, he finally lost. New York overwhelmed him, and he finally lost. So Golinkin just published on the blog, Purim blog, and I have two copies in front of me, published a whole essay on a topic I discussed a few years ago on Rav Shaul Lieberman. And my Talmud, Mark Shapiro, claims, following my lead, that Professor Lieberman was an Orthodox Jew. And he writes here, the title is, "Was Professor Lieberman Orthodox or Conservative?" An interesting article, it's a pilpul, and he reaches the conclusion that he was somewhere like traditional, is the word. I want to go on record as stating again, this is David Golinkin writing, and I'm very fond of David Golinkin, but he's describing himself, not Professor Lieberman. Rav Shaul Lieberman was 100% Orthodox. Why he was in the seminary is a different question. It's not for now. I discussed it at length. If you don't want to accept Ani Rothkopf's opinion / Aaron Ratkefet, you can ask Baruch Lichtenstein. I can only tell you that Baruch Lichtenstein took his class. This has to be late 60s, early 70s, perhaps late 60s. I think I was still in America. Took his class to meet Professor Shaul Lieberman. And he told the class, you can ask him any question you want, kol ha-Torah kula, it's as if he learned it 1 minute ago. Hakol munach lefanav b'kupsa. And the fellas went, and these were the best fellas in the yeshiva with Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, and they shot questions at Rav Shaul, and it was as if he had just closed that Gemara 1 second before. But he was 100%. I know his Talmidim well, and I can tell you, I stand on it. So this whole controversy broke out. So many people contacted me. I haven't changed my opinion of 2 years ago, who's that? All right, now down to work. So we finished out the last class. We're talking about Rav Shmuel Belton these last few months, a forgotten name. The Rebbe, yours truly, hopes that someone will pick up. I have a student who seems a little bit interested already. He switched to Bernard Revel from his undergraduate school, and maybe a doctorate will be done on Rav Shmuel Belton, Lekoved Ulitiferet. Now, we spoke about last week Einstein and Stern, and we spoke about how the Jewish studies program began in yeshiva, all because of one basketball player. And it's an amazing story. I have something which anyone can take a copy later if they wish. This was when YU in Israel was still wealthy. It's before Madoff, before the scandal, before everyone was fired here. And here, these are the famous YU ball players of the early 50s. And there's Marvin Hershkowitz standing next to David Hartman right here in this building. It was a moment in time, a moment to remember. And Marvin Hershkowitz, he was the kid, a kid from a typical Bronx home, a kosher home, but Shabbat already decimated. And he's playing all-state high school basketball at the Witt Clinton at CCNY. His conscience bothers him. He's playing on Shabbos. But he knows nothing. How can he come to the yeshiva? And Reg Saracek, the coach, convinces Dr. Belkin, give him a chance. Now, here's where I want to make a correction. My tongue slipped. Who did Rabbi, and I thank the people who contacted me, who did Rabbi Belkin turn to? He turned to Rabbi Avraham, Rabbi, again, I'm making a mistake. I'll tell you why I'm making a mistake in a second. Rabbi Moshe Beistin, Morris Beistin. Now, they were brothers. The reason I kept on saying A based in class and no one corrected me, some of you should have corrected me, is very simple. Rabbi A based in was Rabbi of Marine Park Jewish Center. My wife's aunt, my mother-in-law, Zadeket Levracha, her sister was the president of the sisterhood. So in our home, we always heard about Rabbi A based in, Rabbi Abe, Rabbi Abe, Rabbi Abe. And that's why I said A based in. But I stand corrected 1,000%. It was Rabbi Morris Moshe Basin. And Moshe Basin was assigned to teach Marvin Hershkowitz on a private basis, prepare him, let him enter the yeshiva, and he went on to become the great basketball star. Red Saracek, and just going to go one step further and end it off, Red Saracek's tongue was now watering. You know, once you taste, I don't know what you fellas like, but all right, for the sake of argument, a good thick steak, you want to have another thick steak. So not the same day, a few days later, let's say. So once he tasted Marvin Hershkowitz, he tried to get more, well, I thought the word, jocks is the word they use, these big, strong football guys, basketball guys. So this was great. The yeshiva could take, and a lot of Jewish boys were fabulous in basketball at this time. And they began a formal program. But as time moved on, the Rosh Yeshiva were hysterical. Aaron Lichtenstein, as a student, was demonstrating. And it became a very serious program. And you wound up having not the basketball stars coming, but kids who really wanted to learn about Torah. And I'll end off last week's lecture with today's continuation. An email I got from a student at this time today, evidently a world-famous medical doctor. I see all his titles here beyond my comprehension, what it all stands for, but an MD I still recognize. His name, Dr. Todd Heller. And Todd, who's been listening to our Shiurim, writes to me, the Jewish Studies Program, or later what it was called, the James Stryer School, named after the writer, someone from Bangor, Maine, endowed it, was crucial in my development as I hope a Ben Torah, and it was one of the highlights of my YU years. It allowed me, and this is very moving for me to read, because remember, I grew up from the 7th grade on, all my Rebbeim were Gedolei Yisrael. It allowed me to go from barely reading a vocalized Hebrew text to participating in Rabbi Willick's summer kollel 5 years later. Many of the students of JSS were beneficiaries of NCSY, although this was not my case, and it was the natural pathway from public school to the yeshiva world. Many of the teachers were congregational rabbis who traveled from the metropolitan areas, such as Rabbi Stephen Shlomo Riskin, Lincoln Square Synagogue, Rabbi Benjamin Blech, Young Israel of Oceanside. Others taught more full-time and split their time between JSS and Stern College, Rabbis Manfred Fulda and Walter Orenstein. I believe this program is now referred to as the Mechina program. I believe it may be smaller and have a different student body. People seem to catch the Balei Tshuva bug either much earlier or post-college. And I want to thank Dr. Heller Todd for that, his description, and JSS, and that's what I told you when I came into the yeshiva, and the latest Jewish action. Again, I'll talk about this next week because the world is exploding. You don't know what's going on. This article... And neo-Hasidicism and Zikui Haget, Sizlebedik. I don't know how to translate that. Nothing to Hebrew, nothing to English. Sizlebedik. So when I came into the yeshiva that rainy morning, Charlie is here. It's about the fourth time I'm talking about it, but it left such an impression. And you got to see the Jewish Action article. It's all in there. What we're telling them about that I said, you wouldn't be here to say I'm telling the truth. I don't even believe what I'm saying. We came in, it was a terrible rainy day. We got to YU very late. The cab took 2 hours from the airport. It was the fifth rainiest day in the history of New York City. And we asked, where's their minion now? It was 9 o'clock. They told us, right, Reuben Hall, right? Am I right? Reuben Hall, third floor. And we, one of the hall, one I don't know what floor. It was the floor with a shtickler based medrash. And because I don't want to be confused, because I was later dealing with Bernard Revel Graduate School, which I think is third floor. So anyway, whatever floor it was, we went up to the minyan, two innocent sheep, both of us talmidim of Rabbi Yeruchim Yerelik of a different era in yeshiva. Did you learn by Rabbi Yeruchim? Who did you learn by? Tell me. Who was your last Rabbi in high school? Before you are, you So before you went to Harvard, you weren't exposed yet to the real, had mercy on a yucca, that's all I can say. You got away, because a yucca, Washington Heights, MTA, Harvard, he got away. So we come in, and they're ready to say, Hallel, it's Rosh Chodesh Iyah, and I couldn't believe my eyes. There is Rabbi Simcha Willig. We say Hallel with musical instruments. And there's the Chatam Sofer on the shelf. Shele the Tshuvat Chatam Sofer. He didn't allow an organ in the synagogue on a Wednesday. And here, you follow me, Ali? They're pulling out their guitars and they said, Azah Hallel. I was ready to blow my brains out. It was like a parah for all the sins. Who has time for a Hallel with music, with Chassidish, with what? I just arrived. And let us roll on. My dear students, in addition to whatever Dr. Belkin did outside of the yeshiva, he did a world in the yeshiva. And as I stated all along, Dr. Belkin was I would call him, I've used the word schizophrenic in the positive sense. He was unlike the Rav. The Rav lived in two worlds. The Hashkafas, as you've seen, were very, very similar. But the Rav lived in one world. He was able, you didn't feel any dichotomy. When the Rav was the Rav giving over Reb Chaim, he was a Rosh Yeshiva. But the same Rav could give a philosophic lecture where you felt no dichotomy whatsoever. Reb Shmuel Belkin lived in two worlds. There was a certain schizophrenia. On one hand, he never left Rotten. He never left his youth. He was a Litvisha yeshiva person. I have a recording of him giving a shir. You can't understand the word. He swallowed his marbles. He can barely make out what he's saying. And it didn't matter what language he was speaking, his native Yiddish or English. He was the worst public speaker I ever heard in my life. And what the man accomplished is beyond words. But as a speaker, the exact opposite of Moriah Rebbe. But he was a Litvisha yeshiva boy. A minute later, he was telling jokes with Albert Einstein. They were exchanging jokes. You understand, there's the famous picture where he and Einstein are hysterical. A minute later, he's telling a joke, the world-famous joke that the New York Times wrote it up, that he told the Cardinal Smellman when he got up and said, you're a yarmulke, your skull, we both wear skull caps. Yours is red, but your institution's in the black. My skull cap is black, but my institution is in the red. And this is from Shmuel Belkin, and I'll talk about him more. But his first love was the yeshiva, and he brought in, when he met a Litvisha survivor, he was overwhelmed. And he spoke about all the things he did for the Litvisha survivors, and how he changed the faculty, enhanced the faculty. And I want to come to one more name that we didn't mention last week, and that is in 1944, he brought in a personality to the yeshiva who was going to be one of the dominant, colorful figures who gave the yeshiva its raison d'etre, who gave the yeshiva its spirit for many years to come, 1944 into the early 1990s. And that, of course, was Reb David Lifshitz. Now, Reb David Lifshitz, his years 1906, 1930, 1993, and we have the privilege sitting with us today is Reb David Lifshitz's daughter, Gveret Chaya Waxman, married to someone I yet knew from yeshiva. He's a little bit younger than I am, but he's accomplished a lot more in his life, and that is Professor Chaim Waxman sitting there. Chaya, any mistake I make, correct me on the spot, because I'm working, and then I'm going to question you, I'm going to bother you, you know, what your reflections. But let me just give them a basic outline. Yomo, do me a favor, turn off the, I'm warming up. The Rav used that word, 77, in the Pesach, she in memory of his wife, when the first point he made on the Karat HaTov was a little obtuse, and he saw the audience, it was geared for Stern College people, but it attracted a much bigger crowd. And he saw they didn't comprehend, so he said, don't worry, I'm only warming up now. And the audience went hysterical that the Rav knew baseball. Okay. Rav David Lifshitz, Mazel Tov to the Chatan Kala. Rav David Lifshitz was born in Minsk, White Russia, and already as a kid he was an Iluy. How do we know he was an Iluy? At the age of 12, he composed a Perush on Daniel, Ezra, and Nehemiah. That Perush was written with a close childhood friend, Avraham Rosenstein. You all know Avraham Rosenstein, but you know him under a different name. Ani Rothkopf, Aaron Rakefet, Avraham Rosenstein, Avraham Ibn Shushan. Are you familiar with the dictionary that we all use, Hamilon HaChadash, which is one of the volumes that have determined the way the Hebrew language is spoken as we reconstruct the Jewish people, Alat Mata Kodesh. Before his bar mitzvah, his family moved to Grodno, and in Grodno he met the person who would become to his Rebbe Mufak, Rav Shimon Shkap. Rav Shimon Shkap had a yeshiva in Grodno, and for 5 formative years he studied with Rav Shimon. Rav David then went on to Mir, where he studied with Rav Lazy Yehuda Finkel, the Rosh Yeshiva, the son of the Saba of Slabatka, Rav Natan Svi Finkel, and the famous Mashgiach, Rabbi Yeruchim Levavitz. Now, what's fascinating here, and this is information which I have, I used to speak with the old-time Mira people, because that was the tremendous influence on me. Seventh grader had Rav Geshen Yankelevich, I think it was in the first class he taught at Solanter, or the second class. Then in eighth grade, I had Rav Penich Fishman. So at a very early age, I was exposed to Mir and what it was all about. And they told me that already in Mir, Rav David was not like the average student. He was different. There was a certain piety about him. Not Hasidic in the sense of the Hasidic world, of today, but a certain chassidus in the sense of piety. He was not the average Litvish student, we'll put it that way. The Litvakin, you know, clean-shaven, you saw what I might, what was in the Sunday class, I showed you what Rav Moshe had to say to my Talmud, who published the Sefer on why you're not allowed to shave, and Rav Moshe, I never saw such language. Again, it's Rabbi Mordechai Tendler telling us what Rav Moshe said to this kid. So I can't say it's Eid Mi Pied, and I'm an Eid Mi Pied, Mi Pied. But wow, did Rav Moshe, how can you be Motzi Laz on the Litvishi Yeshiva and Mir? Everyone was clean-shaven. And the Litvishi Bacha was a different type of lifestyle. But Rav David already in Mir, they tell me, was different. In 33, he married the daughter of Rav Yosef Yeselovich, Tzipori Yeselovich, the Rav of Tzuvalk, and when his father-in-law died, he became Tzuvalk of Rav. And that title he brought with him the rest of his life. Tzuvalk of Rav, he was involved in rescue work and helping them and during these difficult periods. And this becomes important, you'll see why in a few minutes. And then when it reached the point already where there was no hope, he finally tried to escape. He got the visa, America, he was well known, non-quota. Do you know who got him the non-quota visa immigrant status?
Well,
Chaya, you know what, maybe you can sit up close, because people complain afterwards, they can't, when students comment, they can't hear the comments. Yeah.
I understand that there were two situations. One was that he received papers from Burlington, Vermont.
To be Rav.
You needed something that right. Showed that they would employ you. And in the end, I believe from a good, from Rabbanim in the New York area, yeah. I guess, and he did not use the one from Burlington, Vermont, but I know that later on he traveled to Burlington, Vermont to give Hakaras HaTov. I believe Rabbi Herman was Rav then in Burlington, Vermont.
That's Rabbi Herman from All Belongs to the All for the Boss.
Right, right.
Okay, then I want to ask you a question that has always haunted me. When we were in yeshiva, we always learned and knew that when they were running away, and again, I want to say to the students and to all those listening, I mean, all right, we have a nice crowd here in the room, but there are hundreds and hundreds more listening across the world. I want to say to them again, it's not just that Hitler killed 6 million. Imagine what these people went through to run, to survive the impact. Now, while they were running, a child died. What is the story there?
Okay, I just want to go back a second. They also had passports from Sugihara. The people who know Japanese.
They know the story.
Sorry. They did not use that, although they did travel in the end through Kobe, Japan.
Right.
We just had Pearl Harbor December 7th.
Right.
And that was before that, obviously.
Right. Right.
Okay. I just. Shabbos Lech Lecha, Ches Cheshvan, October 21st, 1939. A Polish prominent person came to my father's house in Suwałk and said that on Monday, the Rav and two community representatives should come to the German officers. It was still a situation where they were hoping that the Russians would take over, and the Germans, they didn't know which way it was going to go, and they are going to tell them about the fate of the Jews. On Sunday, my father had a meeting, and they talked about all the possibilities, and then it was, a command was given that in 3 days, all the Jews have to leave Suwałk. The quote from my father was, Yidden me'adafen rachamim.
Jews, we need rachamim.
Okay, Yud Dalet Cheshvan, they went, my father and some representatives of the community went to the Lithuanian border and were at one point stopped and told another three steps and I shoot. They went back. On October 26th, Nazis broke through the Lithuanian border. Chaf Vav Cheshvan, Wednesday, November 8th, is when this took place. And my father arranged for my grandmother, my mother, my older sister, who was then 5 years old, and my...
That's Shulamit.
Shulamit Kamenetsky now. And my... And the baby, they had Avivis Rachel, who was named after my grandfather. It was actually a very modern name. My mother chose it Avivi.
Avivi. My father is in me.
Father. His name was Yosef.
Uh-huh.
And Rachel was a grandmother. Sunday, Rosh Chodesh Kislev. Oh, I'm sorry. They went out with a wagon with a few other Jews. There was shooting on the way. The group dispersed. My grandmother apparently went in one direction. The infant baby, who was 6 months old at the time, died. And
The baby was shot? Well, you don't know.
There remain certain questions. We don't know exactly, but that's the way the story came. And my older sister, who was 5, was missing. My mother took the baby back to Suwałk, and they had Kvura on Sunday, Rosh Chodesh Kislev. My grandmother somehow made it back a broken and hurt lady later that night. And the Jews of Soval told my father, he refused to leave with the rest of the family at first because he said, I am not going to leave the Union of Sovok. But then when my sister was missing and this tragedy occurred, they said, you must go find your daughter. So he left again with my mother. My grandmother could not do the trip that time. And they traveled on the roads. And I think this is sort of a well-known story that my father said that a voice came out in Polish. Is that the Suwalka Rav? He was debating whether to answer or not. And he said, yes. And he was told, don't go through the main road. The police are looking for you. And they went through very unknown roadside roads. And they made it through some villages. They were trying to get close to the Lithuanian border. At that point, they stopped. There was more shooting. My father started to say, Vidui. Somehow they made it through and found a house, which miraculously there was a Jewish woman who gave them shelter at that point. There had been another story along the way where my father was sent to, with some Jewish representatives, to try to plead for the Jews of Suwałk, and the Germans held a knife up to his throat and said that we are going to shech you of kosher. And there was no hope left. Eventually, they took my father and he made it through. It was a whole story with meeting some yeshiva, some Jewish young men who were farming and milking the cows, and they got my father over the border into Lithuania. He was then greeted by the Jews in Calvary saying, we have your daughter. It seems that there was a man who took my sister over the border. And my father wanted to send back for my mother who had stayed at this house, but she was so anxious, she started to walk. And there was apparently a bridge that was the divider, and on the bridge, but she, my mother had very blue eyes and was light, and was arrested by the Lithuanian police. Luckily, she was already on that side. They took her to the police, the Jews in Calvary, and my father then found out. When they negotiated, they got her out of jail there. They, of course, told her that there was a reunion with my sister. Eventually, my grandmother did make it into Lithuania. My parents then went through Moscow. They tried to get papers for my grandmother. Unfortunately, they came after the late, they were in Kovno. They were there for about a year, I believe. And my grandmother's papers came too late. And the rest of the story is that my parents and my sister made it through Japan to Honolulu, to San Francisco. Yeruchim Lebovitz, now lives in Yerushalayim, was born on the boat.
Right.
My mother was the midwife. They had the bris in San Francisco.
Rabbi Yeruchim Lebovitz is a grandson of Rabbi Yeruchim, for whom he's named, of Mir.
Yeah, excuse me. Nachman lives in Yerushalayim.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay. That his father.
Okay.
His father.
No, his brother. Meshulayb was one of the sons of Reb Yeruchim. Meshulayb and his wife, Sarah, they had their son Yeruchim.
Right, on the boat.
The bris was in San Francisco.
Right, and I even know more that they didn't have papers for him because he was born on the boat. So when they got off the boat, they took him out in a sack that no one should see him. And that's the way they got him into the United States, because of the lack of papers. That's the story I heard afterwards. And I believe it's printed. I just want to mention to the class, let me just mention to the class, there's a Sefer Tehillah LeDavid that came out. It was a year after your father's demise, right? 1994. And it's students published מפי השמועה שיחות מוסה בענייני יממים נוראים חנוכה פורים ופסח אשר נשא הגאון מורנו ורבנו רב דוד ליפשיץ גאון אב בית נצובה ורש מטיפתי בישיב שבין יצחל חנן and previously they had published his שיורים on חולן on מסכת חולן your father's שיורים and his תלמידים put this out and in the introduction to the Sefer you will find a great deal of some of the details, not what were the escape in Europe and all the details you gave us are not there, but at least there's an overlook with some fascinating details on the life of Reb David. I want to ask you another question. How did your mother ever recover from the loss of a child? And again, I it's overwhelming to me on a personal level. I ask, can we ever forgive the Germans?
In a way, I don't think she ever did recover fully.
That's what we were told.
I know that I remember every year when the yard site came out, there was a lot of whispering and talking between my mother and father. These were the days before there was really any open talk in families about the Shoah. I always felt something, but I didn't know exactly what I was feeling. I was born in Chicago, where my father took
I'm going to tell that to the class right in a second.
I was born on Chai Cheshvan, and I was given the name Chaya. They still did not know
whether
or not my grandmothers were alive.
Right.
My mother's mother and my father's father. So only my younger sister got the name of my grandmothers.
I just want to say one thing about the question. How did she ever survive? You know, in a way she did. In a way she did. Like, I mean, how did any survivor continue? And they did a miraculous thing.
Shmua in the yeshiva was that she suffered.
She suffered. But I just want to tell you the one connection. Her yard site is exactly
my mother used to say, who is going to remember Aviva's yard site? Well, it turned out that my mother was visiting my younger sister 19 years ago, Sukkis. She developed pneumonia. She died in Cleveland. And the Kfura was said to be in Eretz Yisrael. She died on Chod Ches Cheshvan, the exact day of my sister's Ptira. And we had a Levaya at YU, and then came to Eretz Yisrael. And her Kfura was the exact same day as my sister's Kfura.
Wow.
And this is written on the Kippur. So we will always.
The connection. I mean,
that's a minishamayim. Minishamayim is ikunu on a sad level, but nevertheless a big schut. I want to mention to the class that when Reb David arrived, there were you have to, and this is not only with Reb David, with a lot of the big rabbanim who came over from Europe, they already had balabatim from their shtetlach that were here already. The east side was filled with the Landsmannschaft, you know, if you were from Varsha and you were from Lodz and then you could go, and each one had their own little shul and their burial ground. So it turned out that there were a lot of people from Zuwalk in Brooklyn, in the Bensonhurst, East New York area, which was at one time the heart of the Jewish community in Brooklyn. My wife's family is from there. My wife was actually born there, though she moved to the Bronx a few months later, but technically she was born in Bensonhurst in Brooklyn. And these tzuvalkas got together, and that's what I read in the right. Tehillah well, David.
This is the Yisker book of Tzuvalk, which was, I remember many, many meetings in my house with the Tzuvalka Landsmanship.
Right.
My father faithfully went to their meetings.
Yisker book Tzuvalk.
And it took many, many years to get this book out.
It's in Yiddish, I see.
It's in Yiddish. There is a version in Israel.
In Hebrew.
In Hebrew that was published here.
See, it's and, the memorial pages after pages in these Sefer Zichronot. It's to give life to people who were killed and, oh, God, what we have gone through. And these people brought your father to Brooklyn and provided an
apartment. Dumont Avenue.
Dumont Avenue. And many of them never knew your father. They had come to America earlier. But they knew what your father did from the time he became Rav. And they felt Hakaret HaTov. And then in 43, your father goes to Chicago to...
Before
42. Beis Medrash LaTorah. And then he establishes a reputation, and he has two tremendous offers. And you know, New York is the heart. Many a rabbi I know has made a very bad mistake because they were kings of the universe, but outside of New York. And the desire to come into the New York area, I don't want to mention names, I know Rabbanim who were kings. They came into the New York area. Akmes nefesh, acharei akmes nefesh, acharei asman. You follow me, Jason? Sometimes you got to be satisfied to be a little bit out of the limelight than to be in the crucible of the rabbinate. But everyone wants to come to New York, even the Rav. But you see, the Rav is very smart. He kept one foot in Boston and one foot in New York. So he never, ever could be totally caught up in the New York environment. But Rav David had two offers, one to Teira Vadas, and one, Dr. Belkin, who again, looking for three of you, you'll add the third and a second, one, Dr. Belkin, looking for the big Litvisha Rabbanim, Reitz, and according to what I was told, Rav David Lifshitz chose Reitz over Teira Vadas, because Teira Vadas has at its goal to create Balabatim. They were not as rabbi-oriented, conquering America, going out and changing the American scene as what you call YU today. It wasn't YU yet, it only becomes YU in 45, university status. But YU, Rav Shmuel Belkin, this was Rabbi Revel already, this was Mori Urebi, Rav Soloveitchik, not just to turn out rabbis, but rabbis to go into the rabbinate to conquer America. In our days in YU, you barely heard about a balabas. You heard about Rabbanim out in the field. And Rav David felt he already was caught up in that American Torah dream. And YU beckoned to him, and he chose Reitz. Yes, Chaim, what did you want to say?
I take it back. It wasn't an offer.
I just wanted to comment that my father did not make decisions easily. I have a telegram at home today from Dr. Belkin. The offer to come to YU was over about a two-year period. According to my father's responses, my mother's pregnancy with me was the longest pregnancy on earth, because there were correspondences continuously saying, the Rebbetzin can't move now, and we'll talk about it later and later. And when the last telegram, which I have at home, from Dr. Belkin, says something like, this is the last offer. You must make a decision now. And so eventually my father did make the decision and came. I think the fact that Shatskis,
Reb Moshe Shatskis, who I've spoken about, the Lamsha Rav.
And with...
Reb Shimon had been there.
Right, Reb Shimon had been there. That was 28, 29. Right.
Which was a very, very big influence. And from there, my father never
one,
left.
One other thing, I just have Reb Lazy Yehuda.
Right.
Had Reb Lazy Yehuda and also encouraged him.
Encouraged him to go.
Yeah. He was, you're quite correct, he was extremely devoted to Rabbonus.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why he called himself Suval Gerov, because he was, I mean, he felt Rabbonus. He promoted Rabbonus. And here at Yitzchak Bar Chanan, they were promoting Rabbonus.
Now, I want to say something that the Kollel and Michael Midman should understand. He didn't just come to the yeshiva. He lived across the street. Your family lived right across the street from the yeshiva. What was your address?
475 West 186th Street.
Okay, you know, around the corner off Amsterdam.
Actually, the first apartment that Rabbi Belkin, it was wartime, and my father found was on 187th Street on top of the mikveh.
Wow.
And when my sister and I was a baby, and my mother arrived, my mother immediately said, take me back to Chicago.
Where did you bring me? You planned to live on top of a mikveh.
And later on, when a few years later, I have to credit Adina Bernstein.
Right, Adina Bernstein, her husband was a Talmud Mufak of Reb Meisha Soloveitchik out of the 30s, Reb Michal Bernstein. And Dina was a ishiyut, something very, very special. She could move mountains.
And she found them an apartment in 475.
Uh-huh. And she didn't have an easy life, Adina. Her first husband was Rabbi Werfeld, was killed in a chaplain, killed overseas, World War II. And then she married Reb Michal Bezivik Sheni, and he was a wonderful individual, very devoted to the Soloveitchik family, very devoted to the yeshiva, and he lo harich yamim. He suffered afterwards from his disabilities, and he was in a wheelchair, as you recall. It was very sad. But I want to say something about Reb David. They lived across the street from the yeshiva. His presence in the yeshiva, see, the Rav, and I'll give you a source, the Rav always bemoaned the fact that he didn't know how to befriend his students. He didn't know how to transmit the total emotion that he had. Reb David, on the other hand, he was there. He was there for everyone. He was not just a Rebbe for his classroom. He knew every good student in the yeshiva. He was filled with warmth, with varmkeit. When he shook your hand, he took it, two hands, like Rabbi Levine. The story about Rabbi Levine, that was Reb David Lifshitz. But I want to say something, and I want you to comment on it. It was my feeling, look, I knew the Shanghai crowd intimately. I knew the Hatshatser, Reb Yeruchim Yurelik, Reb Noach Bornstein, who were not part of the Shanghai crowd. I knew them, they also went Kobe, but they already had visas, they were well known, they were able to go on directly either to Canada, to the United States, but they never had to go to Shanghai. I knew them intimately. Your father was different. I always felt, and I mentioned this to Chaim, he was at home in the United States. I didn't feel the tension that I felt with Reb Yeruchim, with Reb Noach, even with Reb Hanich Fishman. They were still as if to say, why did this happen? Why did we have to leave Europe? Well, what are we? How can we be matzliach here? What can we do here? I had the feeling your father was at home. I don't know, am I right or wrong? Thanksgiving Day you didn't celebrate.
No.
Okay.
I have to say that I didn't really see that side. My father really never learned English. He could manage the banking, the things you had to do, but at the time gave shiur in Yiddish.
Yiddish, of course.
Later on, it was very easy for him to make the transition. When the other rabbanim switched to English, he switched to Hebrew.
Yeah, I want to say something. Let me interrupt you. A very important point. When that terrible day happened, that ended Torah in America, when I was sitting right here, the Rebbe is sitting where I'm sitting, and Danny Greer is standing where you're sitting, and Danny Greer says to the Rav, this is, I have the date actually, I can date it, it's September 1960, says to the Rav, Rebbe, you're destroying American boys who want to learn Torah. You're withholding Torah from them. And what do you mean? What do you mean? And Danny Greer says, Rebbe, I graduated Princeton. I told the Rav how to hear, graduated Princeton. All right, Ivy League. And the Rav, and so what do you mean? And Danny Greer says, I don't understand Yiddish. You don't understand Yiddish? Good. Tomorrow's shiur will be in English, and I'll give you a bechina at the end of the shiur. And the next day, the Rav gave the shiur in English. Rabbi Brandspiegel to be. Rabbi Brandspiegel was dying because he, we can learn in Torah in a goyish sprach. And we were dying because the Rav's English was so much above us. I'm studying with my wife now. The Lonely Man of Faith. I mean, the English there is overwhelming. I think he makes up words that don't exist in English, but it's taken from the German language. And the Rav switched to English. Danny Greer, chutzpan, he's still like, tell me, Danny is still Danny. He's a great guy. So Danny comes over to the Rav. Rebbe, I'm ready to take the exam. You understood me? Good, I'm too tired. Fine, I'll continue. And he never went back to Yiddish again in the classroom. Ultimately, every Rebbe had to switch to English. As I say, we became a you are a klishlishi. I'm yet a klisheni. You're a klishlishi. But Reb David switched to Hebrew. And he made the transition beautifully. Because students were coming back from Israel, it's before Oxford. Everyone had to know Hebrew in those days. The other Reshi Yeshiva, I can tell you, Reb Noach Bornstein, Reb Yerichon Gerelik, Reb Shmuel Eliezer Volk, they were lost because they didn't speak Hebrew. They couldn't speak. They had no Talmud. If they spoke Yiddish, it's like I'll give a shiur in Hebrew today. Reb Aaron Lichtenstein had to switch to English in the Kollel. I mean, for Reb Aaron to give up a principle, you don't know what you're talking about. And he, but Reb David, as I see it from afar, because I already left the Yeshiva, I went in Aliyah 69, Reb David was able to make that switch beautifully. But I don't know, I felt there was such love. You didn't hear sarcasm from him. You didn't hear from Reb Yeruchim, from Reb Noach. When you heard Hailfire and Brimstone, Reb Yeruchim. Reb Noach was the same Hailfire and Brimstone, but it was on a different level. He was a different personality. Your father, I always felt there was such joy, such understanding. And I'll tell you, did you want to say, I'll tell you a personal story? Yeah, go ahead. Do you want to say anything? Or I can flow. Okay. So I'll tell you a personal story that illustrates what I'm saying. I come from a family of three boys. So the next in line is my brother Leonard Levy. Someone showed me when I was Menachem Avil Saturday night. They showed me, Malka, the Almana, showed me a picture of her wedding. And there's the Tolna Rebbe of Philadelphia, who Shimron was a Philadelphia boy. So the Tolna Rebbe came into New York, L'Sadeh Kedushin, and there's my brother sitting next to the Tolna Rebbe. So my brother, everyone, he was a very smart kid, an Elisha cup. So everyone encouraged him, Reb David, he learned by your father, and Reb David used to say, you have to be like your brother, you have to go into the rabbinate, you have to steig away like your brother. Then the day came that my brother tells the Rosh Yeshiva, Rebbe, Anit Kabalti, Einstein, I'm going to study medicine. And my brother tells me that your father, very serious face, and I have to admit, I've emulated this story, doing it myself, the same shtick, 100 times over. And your father says to him, Tishma, until now, he probably spoke Yiddish at that time, because it's the late 50s, early 60s. So he says, until now, you know, you make a mistake in learning, it's not the end of the world. What's consigned? The name of Ben Yoima, you know, you're a day, it's not the end of the world. But a doctor who makes a mistake, that can be very serious. You better concentrate on your studies and master them very well. That's what your father said to my brother. And
yeah, I want to comment on that. Okay, that was very, very much my father. I know that a number of doctors today came to my father, who would tell me them, and said they decided to go to medical school. First reaction, maybe you want to stay in learning, chinuch, everything to convince them that perhaps not. Once he saw that their minds were made up, the message was go out and be the best doctor you can. On a more personal level, my husband Chaim was a Talmud of my father's, and he was in the kollel for a while, and he decided to study sociology and go further with it, and which I was very happy about. And my father also took the same derech. Once he realized that this is what he wanted to do, the doctorate took a number of years, and he would follow the steps. New, where are you up to? Where are you up to? Are you getting it already? Because he wanted him to go so paderek with that.
Very, very fascinating. I just want to mention to the class, you're seeing living history. Chaim, what I want to mention to you, and I mentioned this last year, his father was Rav Nissim Waxman, was a Litvisha, came to America. His father was the Rav in Lakewood, who had the greatest influence upon Rav Aaron Cutler when they wanted to open the yeshiva, when the Hatzalah work reached the dead end, 43. His father was instrumental in convincing Rav Aaron to come to Lakewood. So you see, Lakewood Yeshiva owes a bit of a debt to the father of Professor Chaim Waxman. Now, I want to say something else about Rav David that's very fascinating. And here was this Litvisha person and Litvisha yeshiva person who dressed and fitted the mold and then looked like a Litvisha Rosh Yeshiva, and very good friends with Reb Moshe Feinstein, Reb Aaron Cutler, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, you know, you mentioned this whole crowd. Here is a person who signed on in 56, one of the signatories, am I correct, to the Cheirim against the mixed board of rabbis, the synagogue council. So you see, he was in that world. On the other hand, when it came to the state of Israel, there was no greater lover of Zion than Reb David Lifshitz. And he worked very hard in the first election. Believe it or not, Mizrahi and Aguda ran a joint ticket. One of the rabbinic personalities who encouraged them was your father. Are you aware of that? Your father he couldn't see that dichotomy, that cleavage, that chasm between the Mizrahi and Aguda. We all believe in Torah. And you should know that Mizrahi and Aguda in that first election got more seats than basically they would ever get in two modern times. Today already, you could never see Mizrahi and Aguda running together, but each one on their own today is a more powerful party than they were at that moment in time, for many reasons: the shifting population, the aliyah, the birth rate, the Balei Tshuva, and who would ever dream that you could say today there are more than 2 million Shomrei Shabbos Jews in the state of Israel. I mean, it's an unbelievable, and I'm not talking now traditional, every statistic shows you're going on to 80%, you're well over 70%, but your father had a certain broadness that I felt was beyond many of the other Yudapeya Reshi Yeshiva that taught at YU. Also, your father, the Agudas HaRabbanim, as you said, Chaim, he considered himself a Rav, Tzuvalka Rav. When finally the Agudas HaRabbanim shifts gears, your father was part of the first presidium after the old god was pushed out. And that itself is an interesting story that we can go into one day, but not now. It deals with the history of Agudas HaRabbanim. They had a convention, and they brought everyone out to vote, all the Rosh Yeshiva, and they were up all night, and we knew what went on, and the next day, never, they had to say Shir. So I remember, I believe it was a Reb Noach Bornstein Shir. You know, students are very, very bright, but they can be very sharp and very sarcastic and can be put the needle in very easily. So I remember we said to Reb Noach, Rebbe, the Rosh Yeshiva geschlafen bei Nacht? Did you sleep at night? Did you get a good night's rest? And you know, he couldn't admit that they were up all night politicking. But he was a Rav, Agudas HaRabbanim. Also, I'll tell you a beautiful story. When you can correct me if I don't have the facts right. But one of the amazing organizations on the American scene, it's an organization you barely hear of today, Ezras Torah. Ezras Torah was organized around World War I and by the leaders of the Agudas HaRabbanim. Jews were starving in Europe, Yeshivalite were going hungry, it was terrible. And their goal was to help Ezras Torah, to help Torahdik families, to help the yeshiva. And you all know the legendary Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin was selected to run it, and he ran the Ezras Torah well into his old age. Then they needed someone to take over, Rav Naftali Rift of Kamden. Then Rabbi Rift died. Rabbi Rift was an interesting person, a great-grandson of Rav Naftali Tzvi, Yehuda Berlin, the Netziv, for whom he was named. And Rabbi Rift had the longest beard of any Rav in America. And when the Cherem came out against Mixed Board of Rabbis, he was chairman of the Mixed Board of Rabbis of Camden and South Jersey. Camden and what else was there at Cherry Hill, that whole area. He was the chairman of the Mixed Board of Rabbis. Rabbi Gettinger is his son-in-law. Rabbi Gettinger of the Young Israel of the West Side. I understand he's not well today. I should have Refuah Shleima. I taught his granddaughter, actually, in Michal Aaron, the American division. I believe she lives in Chicago today. So now they needed someone to head up the Ezras Torah, and it was a problem. Who do you find? And they didn't know what to do, and they met privately, and they decided there's one person who could head it up, and that's Rav David Lifshitz. No, how do you convince him to become the head? So they called him and told him that Rav Moshe Feinstein wants to meet with him. And in Rav Moshe's home, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was there, I believe Rav Aaron Cutler was there. They spread the lekach, cake, and drinks, and schnapps. And Rav David came in, and they all drank l'chaim mazel tov. You are the new head of Ezras Torah. And that's how he became the head of Ezras Torah that he devoted so much feeling to. And now I want to, on a personal level, I want to talk about my family's interaction with your father. I told this part of this, I told you once when we were eating together, and you didn't even know about it, didn't realize what your father did. He was a unique individual. Again, I state, it wasn't just the 30 students in his class. Every top student in the yeshiva had a relationship with Reb David. It could be the fact that you lived across the street, that he lived across the street, that he was accessible, that he davened in the yeshiva, that he celebrated the chagim in the yeshiva. It could be that this all led to this special relationship. Mori Urebi, and I'm now quoting to you from that volume that I described as the finest volume written since Shakespeare put his pen down, from Washington Avenue to Washington Street. You got to admit the cover is catchy. I designed it. People ask me who designed it. I designed it. And I got a student to risk. I wouldn't go back to Washington Avenue, But I have a student said to me, Rebbe, my life is worthless anyways. I had a hard life, divorce, problems. My life is worthless. So he went back and he took 100 different pictures of Washington Avenue, but that's the real Washington Avenue sign. And this picture I took myself in front of the King David Hotel. It's the street, you know, right across the street. So but in Washington, I quote Rakefet's scholarship from his work on the Rav. And here I am from Washington quoting the Rav, and in the Rav I'm quoting Mori Rebbe. It is Rabbi Soloveitchik declared in an address he delivered in 1975, it is difficult to transfer experiences and not just concepts, to give over things and not just numbers, to pass on feelings, to tell the story of both inner restlessness and serenity, to relate the narrative of joy and awe, of trepidation, and at the same time equanimity in one's heart, one must not use words. Words cannot explain it. Instead, an unusual medium must be utilized. Silence. That Melamed of Olden Meicheder knew how to pass on emotional acquisitions, his ecstatic experiences, and his mystical outlook in life. He knew how to pass this on to his pupils without saying a single word. Of course, these experiences can only be passed on in the fashion that one passes on a contagious illness. How do you communicate a disease? Through contact. And contact is the secret of passing on the experiences of Yahadut. The skill of somehow communicating with the soul of the person is not through the spoken word, but through the art of silence. However, it is very difficult. I have not entirely succeeded in passing on this part of Yahadut. And then I go further. In contradistinction to the Rav, Rav David emanated emotion. And I tell a story here, which the impression it left upon me. We were up all night in Shavuot, studying, learning. Shavuot night, the yeshiva was a fabulous experience. And here we are, ready to daven shacharit. And I spoke about this at the 10th Yahrzeit, if you recall, in the OU Center. And Reb David would break into song, O de lekel, levav choker, baron yachad, kochvei boka, that I would, O de lekel, I thank God who knows what's in our heart, the God who created the great universe, the stars, and this is a piyut that you will find in Rabbi Yaakov Emden's Siddur. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, Hayarei etavach Hashem yagil loma hazema hazeh b'chol boker umachabro migedolei hasvadim. I don't know if you can check it back any further. And Reb David would start singing, and we would start dancing, and like it wasn't until that we were awake all night. We were alive, alert, awake, filled with joy, filled with emotion. It was unbelievable. And the impact he left upon us, something that it fills your heart, the memory, the night, the event, the experience. But there's more. And I want to talk about something else in Reb David's life that is not well known. Just give me 1 second to know what I want to say, but I just want to see what I have in my notes. Yeah, here it is. In the Bronx, there was a shul in a neighborhood that already in the late 50s started to change. The shul was housed in a building that was built for yeshiva. Yeshiva's Rabbeinu Chaim Oiz. It was named after the Vilna Rav. It was in competition with Yeshiva Salanta. Ultimately, Yeshiva Salanta swallowed it up. If you want to know who was a Chaim Oiz graduate, it's somebody that you know on the YU faculty, Professor Yisrael Levitz, Irving Levitz, mean anything to you? So he was a Chaim Oiz graduate. And in that building, there was a shul. The Rav of the shul, the Rav of the yeshiva, was Reb Noach Garfinkel, who was a Yudapeya Shadav. I believe he might have even been of Hungarian origins. Yurapeyesha Rav, a Talmud Chacham. I went to school with his grandsons. One is no longer alive. I taught a great grandson who later went to Harvard and became totally irreligious. I didn't succeed there. I lost 100-0. So when Reb Noach Gonfinkel died, that shul was left without a rabbi. And your father used to walk, this is from Washington Heights to the heart of the Bronx, Arthur Avenue and 180th Street, on Yontif, to speak, to inspire, to encourage. And I once asked him, I said, Rebbe, was machen Sie sich? I said, what are you tying yourself? This is a fading neighborhood. Today you can't, that's right, it's a few blocks from Washington Avenue. You're not going to walk around in that neighborhood today. And your father answered me, Zanomen af Reb Chaim Moshe Grzynski, fa Reb Chaim Moshe Dafchtan. He said he didn't, it's named after Reb Chaim Moshe Grzynski. I don't want to see anything happen. That shul has to continue, that yeshiva has to continue. And for a number of years, your father walked. I don't know where he ate. I don't know if he walked home that day. And we're talking, if I estimate from Washington Heights, you're walking University Avenue, the Grand Concourse, Webster Avenue, Third Avenue, Arthur Avenue. You're dealing with a 50, 60-minute walk at least on the bus, the 36 bus. I lived a few blocks from Arthur, closer to Yeshiva. It took me more than 20 minutes on the bus. All right, the bus has to stop, let people on, off. But I walked on Yontif. I remember it like yesterday. And then I want to say my own personal word of thanks, something that most of you will know. Some of you will not understand. Some of you will understand. In my generation, we all understood it because it was a different generation. But I told you 1,000 times over, the average home in the Bronx, you saw a home, they observed kashrut, but Shabbos, like we read about with Marvin Hershkowitz, that was the norm, that's the way Jews lived. The Chafetz Chaim Rebbe was Malamed Zchut on the Mechalalei Shabbos in America. They do it for Panasa. It's Medasek, it's Ein Mekavein, it's Sigreshe Velonichale, you can come up with 101 Tirutzim. And my father worked in the post office. And he worked half a day Shabbos. I told you, in my building, there was the Weinstein family, the other side of the building. Mr. Weinstein was in Ungarische Talmud Chacham, would come home from work Shabbos, and he would open up a Gemara. In the afternoon, he'd be learning Gemara. Whenever I had a difficult question in Gemara, I couldn't ask my father. But I would go to Mr. Weinstein, I would go around the building, the other side, and ask Mr. Weinstein. His two boys went to MTA. What became of them, I don't know. But he knew how to learn a Daf Gemara. And that was the Bronx. That's the way it was taken. You know, no one even thought there was no concept of halacha, and the Shabbos is Shabbos, you made Kiddush. And as the Rav used to say, the only Shomer Shabbos I saw in Boston when I arrived there were either under the age of 13 or over the age of 70. And the people over the age of 70 were Shomer Sunday and Monday and Tuesday. They didn't work, they were retired. And that was the atmosphere which we were brought up in, which we grew up in. And this is why my heart breaks with the Kapinski tragedy, with the massacre in Hanover. The only men that we knew who didn't work on Shabbos were in their 40s and had a business, were plumbers, was the Aryeh Kapinski's grandfather and Aryeh Kapinski's great-uncle, Hashem Yikom Damo. Those were the only Shomer Shabbos people I knew who didn't work on Shabbos, period. So when my grandfather, when my Zaidi, who lived with us, I give my mother, was Zolcha La'aricha Jomam Tov, and I always said it was Kibud Aviyeim, because the day that my grandmother died, who was a tzaddikit in 1938, it was a year and a half old when she died, and she died in 1939. Sarah, she died Yud Aleph Tevet, and if I'm not mistaken, I keep the yard site. It was the day after Yud Tevet. And she died of aggravation. What was happening to her children on the American scene? There's a dentist, you might know him, Josh Daniel. Josh Daniel is my cousin. And his great-grandmother was the tzaddik of the family. The only home she would eat in was this grandmother. So with the day she died, my mother took in her husband, her the old man, and my grandfather, you know, didn't speak English. As you say, lived in America since 1900, ikveis, worked as a baker in Pechtes, was never Mechallel Shabbos. My mother took him in, and he lived with us for 20 years till the day he died. My mother was Zeichel Arichat Yomim Tovim. So when my father was sitting shiva for his father, Reb David came, Lenachem Avel. Reb David came. The Bronx, 2115 Washington Avenue. And Reb David says to my father, "You will never work again on Shabbos." And my father never worked again on Shabbos. The union people in the post office went to the Menahel Klali, whatever he was called, and they said, "This man has raised a son who's an Orthodox rabbi. It's not nice that he works on Shabbos and embarrasses his son. We have to help him." And the Goyim, the Faglev, the Catholics, fought for my father, and he never worked again on Shabbos. And this, Amaka Taiva, to your father, he said, "You will not give it nicht avet enaf Shabbos." No, this is given, given, but nicht weiter. And take a look what happened. And I, ani modal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Finally, let me end off with a vort that I said at the 10th Yard site that people still meet me and repeat it to me, so it's a sign that it hit home. Were you here at the 10th
yes,
Yard site? You were here.
Yeah,
you,
sure, we asked.
I know nothing. Who asked me? You asked me. I know there are three sisters, Baruch Hashem, who survived. The eldest sister is married to Reb Nosson Kamenetsky, who we'll talk about, and I want to add an addendum about Reb Nosson. I want to show you something next week. You won't sleep at night, but you got to see the truth in front of your eyes. I'm going to show them, I have here the Ktav Yad from Kew Gardens Hills, Kew Gardens, wherever the yeshiva is. It's in here. And I compare it with the Sefer that's published. So, your older sister's married to Reb Nosson, and you're married to Reb Chaim, and then you have your younger sister's married to Reb Chaim Stein of Tells, of his daughter, Baruch Atam. His son, I should say. They should live and be well. So, we have Yisrael Salanta, who we spoke about many years ago. I think they advertised it on the YUA. Of all my shirim, not my shirim and shas and paiskim, that gets no advertisement, but my narishkeit gets all the... So the history of Torah in modern times. So Rav Zera Salanta had three great talmidim. Every Rebbe likes to boast about his talmidim. I told you, the Rav has said more than once, "I have talmidim, even in the Lashon, they would be great." All right, I accept it with a grain of salt. I haven't yet seen a Talmud of the Rav publish an Achiezer like Rav Chaim Isaac Grzinski. But okay, I have yet to see a Talmud of the Rav do what the Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen cooks. I don't know, I wouldn't say we're yet the Lashon, but okay. Every Rebbe has a right to boast. I also boast occasionally about my talmidim. So Rav Yisrael Salanta was boasting. And he said, "I have three great Talmidim. One is a Lamed, one is a Chassid, one is a Chacham." Yeah, it didn't mean that they were only a Lamed to the exclusion of everything else, but that this was their dominant feature. And he boasted about the Yitzchak Blaza, later Rav of St. Petersburg, of Yitzchak Petterburg. I told my students over the decades many times, I didn't know that they were both the same person. The Rav always used to speak about Rav Yitzchak Petterburg. And the Rav Lessin, the Mashkiach, used to speak about Rav Yitzchak Blauser. Only when I studied Tenuah Tamusa, Rav Dov Katz, that I realized that they're talking about the same person. He was a Lamed. He was a Lamed Mufak, the pre-Yitzchak guy, something very special. He was his Lamed. Rav Naftali Amsterdam was the Chassid. He was unbelievably pious, Medadbe Talaka Chamura, way beyond what is required. And Rav Naftali Amsterdam, he was the one who gave his shmuz. Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg writes about it in Sri Deyesh when he was a student in Slabodka. And here Rav Naftali Amsterdam, who had been Rav in Helsinki, was world famous. And Rav Naftali Amsterdam is now going in Aliyah. and he's giving them a chaberkim in Slabodka to give his shmuas before Ne'ila, and he cries to the student body, have mercy upon an old man who amounted to nothing. I envy you that you can still become giants of Torah and Yiret Shemayim. And Rabbi Chil Yaakov says, it made such an impact upon me, a giant of Torah saying, I envy you. And he was the chassid. And then, of course, he had a Talmud, Rabbi Simcha Zissel Broida, who founded Kelm. He was the chacham. He knew how to relate to every student. He knew how to get the best out of every student. He was the Rebbe of Reb Natan Zvi Finkel, the Alt of Slabodka. The Slabodka learned from him how to be a machanech. So I said about the yeshiva. In my days in the yeshiva, there were three great personalities. Mori Rebbe, Reb Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, was the lander. That was Reb Yosef Blaza. Mori Rebbe and Musa, Reb Yaakov Moshe, Kohen Lesson, he was the chassid. And that's the story I write about in Washington, the story that I'll never forget for eternity, that I'm an ear witness to, an eyewitness to. You know, when you come back you don't want to daven with Balabatim when you're a kid. You want to have a minyan that's totally pure. So Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we made a minyan with the Mashgiach. In the Bernard Revel Graduate School, there was a bigger room than usual, was used for assemblies, whatever, how many students did Bernard Revel have. That room we used for a special Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur minyan. We didn't daven in the Beis Medrash. We didn't daven in the auditorium with Maurice Raphael Cohn. We davened with the Mashgiach. And I'll never forget, the Mashgiach gets up before Ne'ilah and he says, as only the Mashgiach could, Min Zayin is Yetz Nitzchiyot, that it's Netzach, we're eternal today. We're like angels. We're not eating, we're not drinking, we're not washing. Everything that goes with Yom Kippur, don't rush to end it. Don't look at the watch. Keep it a little longer. And Rav Shmuel Volk starts yelling in public. We have to, there are men and women and children are fasting. We have to end on time. And in public, he cuts down the mashgiach, and I'm sitting there on Yom Kippur before the Torah. A disgrace. I couldn't believe it. Today I'm a little bit older. The truth is they're both right, but that's a different story. A few months later, the Mashgiach comes over to me, and I had made shidduchim for him. He asked me, this boy, that, you know, I knew a boy, you're going to put together shidduchim. I had hatzlacha. They're still married, to the best of my knowledge. So it's on to 60 years, but they're still married, Ryan Har. So Mashgiach says to me, go outside the Beis Medrash in the Mr. Rome in the hallway. So I go out, and the Mashgiach tells me about this girl and the Midaf of the Shidduch, and do I know anyone? He's describing, and who do you think the girl was? Was the daughter of the Rosh Yeshiva who cut him off, the daughter of Rav Volk. That is a chassid, if you ever saw one. I never forgot that. It has influenced my life. My life is an open book. You check out who I fought with last. You're going to find out my last battle was 1961 in the rabbinate, and believe me, I lost, but I won. It took away my ego, I suffered, but I won. I became a different person. That was my lesson. Who was the Chacham? Reb David Lifshitz. He knew how to get along with students. He knew how to relate to students. He knew how to relate to students who needed not just knowledge, and he had tremendous knowledge. I once saw your father as a visiting Rosh Yeshiva from Israel. I forget who, or maybe I didn't even know the name, but we snuck in to hear them talking and learning. So, and we were kids. Your father mentions a daf. Immediately he reached, but they don't have to go into the shul. I mean, they knew what each one was talking about. They're going back and forth, they're going back and forth. Rashi here, didn't mention one word of what they said. They just quoted. That's what he said to Rashi, Tosfos, the Ran, the Mordechai. David, you should see the knowledge. But people, other students need varimkeit. Other students need encouragement. Other students need that v'run yachat kochvei boka. I can never forget that. And I want to tell you something. And only a wayu person would say this, wayu my time. If you wake up early, and unfortunately or fortunately I wake up early every day, so I always hear the news at 5 before I go down to shul. By then I've already said the Birchat HaShachar, because I have to learn the Gaon Sheet, the Birchat HaTorah, I'm learning, but I always turn on the radio, Chas v'Chalila, I should miss the news, I don't know whether I'm alive or not. And many days a week on Reshet Bet, they play before, you know, the morning, 6 o'clock at Shema Yisrael. Before 5 o'clock, they have English clergy, I don't know, singing, I can't believe my ears, Brun Yachat Kol Chvei Boker in English. I don't know if they realize it's a piyut. Could be they hit the same concept on their own. Baruch Hashem, they have religious feeling. Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, they're good people. Whenever I hear that, and I hear it, I don't know what the schedule is, but at least once a week you hear that song at about 5 minutes to 5 on Reshet Bet. It transports me back to Shavuot in the Beis Medrash, V'run Yachat Kol Chvei Boker. Rabbi Yisrael Salantan had 3 great Talmidim, and we had 3 great influences in the yeshiva. And Reb David was the Chacham.
Can I just add a few comments? First of all, I don't know if people know about the closeness of the relationship between my father and the Rav. They were very, very different in personality, and they were very, very close friends. I remember the Rav coming, sitting with my father in the living room. I remember the tkufa after Rebbetzin Soloveitchik was nifter. The Rav was a broken man. My mother used to make applesauce for him. He would sit, and it was a real love relationship between the two that people didn't really know about. I just want 2 comments. The love for Eretz Yisrael, my father's first wish in Europe yet was to get to Eretz Yisrael. That was the first choice. You couldn't get papers then to Eretz Yisrael. As long as I was growing up, there was always something about different offers in Eretz Yisrael. He was very apolitical. They were always connected with political issues. And I think, in fact, that's why he never came. The house he came from in Grodno was a very, very Tzioni house. I learned my father had 3 sisters who had come to Eretz Yisrael before the war. They were the first ones who disclosed to me that in their home was a picture of Herzl. This my father had never told me. They knew Hebrew very well. We were here in Eretz Yisrael with my father once. We were in the car taking him and driving past,
driving down out of Yerushalayim, and he starts
reciting
poetry.
Bialik and Hebrew poetry.
About the Harim of it.
Right. That I knew, that your father, that he knew Bialik, and he knew Acharam Sesseis, because I spoke with him about it.
He knew many different poets. It was incredible.
That what influenced his personality in terms of getting along with others was the fact that he was a Rav of a city. Now, I grew up with the idea of Tzuvok is a shtetl. Everybody was Shomer Shabbos. I think a lot of people grew up with that image. I found out later that, of course, Tzuvok was actually a big city. Chaim and I went to Tzuvok. We met the last Jew in Tzuvok who had remembered my grandfather and my father. He actually took us to the cemetery. My father had gone in the 70s on a mission to restore the cemetery. And he told us, your grandfather was a emissaire orthodoxe. Dein Tate, ich gewinne a progressive. And we laughed.
Progressive.
Because we never thought of my father as a progressive. And the closing story, there was a story, somebody had knocked on the door of my parents' apartment. We opened it up, and my father, a man came without a yarmulke, and my father calls to my mother and says, come quickly, we have a very important guest, a chasheva guest. And who was this person? He was a Suvalka who had been on the soccer team in Suvalk. They had many sports teams there. My father had numerous times begged him not to play on Shabbos in Suvalk. And this was the greeting that he came. My father understood all kinds of people. And I think this was the key.
So back to your question. You know, was he at home in America? No, he wasn't at home in America. The difference between him and others was his personality.
Right.
He was able to relate to everybody.
Right. He made the best of it.
Yes.
And I want to tell you, gentlemen and ladies, you should know, there was a very famous Israeli politician who owned the country. His name was Pinchas Sapir. He was at Suvalka. And he came to the yeshiva and said, your father, and they embraced, and they hugged, and they were talking, and reminiscence. Unbelievable. Well, anyway, I'm watching the clock. I know that you have other classes here. I want, first of all, Ani Modela HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God brought us together at this moment in time. I want to thank the Waxmans. It was a moment in time. It's a beautiful memoir for your father, what we were able to do. I hope it'll be appreciated across the world. It's a world that's gone. It brings tears to my eyes. But nevertheless, the Borei Olam Ato Machrivan, I don't want to go into big dashanit now, but we have to have the strength to go further. And Tara Tversky told people about the Rav, and it applies to your father as well. She just said it during the Shiva, that my father always made an effort to keep abreast of what was happening in the world of the youth he was teaching so he could relate to them. And when you talk about soccer, and you talk about what I said earlier, the Rav warming up, and I say to my students who are going to be mechanchim, don't grow old. You cannot afford that luxury. A Rebbe, I've given many drashot, but I can't. The key to my life is a Rebbe has to live she'ashirim, mishlei and tochelet all together. You can't live them in stages. And even in Kohelet, which I've reached, Baruch Hashem, I'm filled with she'ashirim and mishlei as well. Don't forget it. Now, first of all, I have enough in my office. I salvaged these when they downsized grossly, and they got rid of everyone. They threw these out. So anyone who wants, it's a beautiful, beautiful volume. And they were made in New York that we spent money on basketball. If anyone wants on Shaul Lieberman, Orthodox or Conservative, there are two copies here. Very, very fascinating. Yitzchak, this is for you. This is for Charlie. Do you read German? A little bit. All right, you'll enjoy. It's English, German, Yiddish. You'll see what people research. It's unbelievable. This is an article that appeared, Conservative Jews Need Orthodoxy. I read it, and I have one comment to make. The accept. You see, that's where this is a conservative Jew, a rabbi, who really wants to live with halacha. But when it comes to egalitarianism, there it's accept. That's out. It's the Gemara in Bechora, Taflamit, with the Ger. He's mekabel everything except. We can't say accept. We are Torah Jews. Western civilization gives us a different message, and we are Western civilization people. But at that point, the intellect has to bow to the heart and the commitment. It's a very interesting article. Finally, for those of you who read modern Hebrew, this is from Makari Shon a week and a half ago. It's dedicated to the problem of Sfardim and Ashkenazim. the interconnection, the ethnic life. Can we eat legumes on Pesach? It is a very sensitive maggot. I was impressed. Each article here, there's one here about what it's like to be a Sfardi growing up in the Hezdi Yeshiva world. And what do? You want to daven Nusach Eidot HaMizrach, and they're davening in Nusach Sfad, which is really Nusach Ashkenazi. There's no black and white solution. In 100 years, these problems won't exist. But it's a very interesting piece. Next Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem, we are rolling. We're Shmuel Shmuley. We're rolling in your hometown, London. The Erev, and what the Machleket is. And we're going to get involved with the Karpath. And it's so interesting. In America, that problem never came up. And I'll show you why. And next Monday, Be'ezrat Hashem, what I'll do. Today, I spoke about Rav David Lifshitz because we were able to have the Waxmans honor us with their presence. Next Monday, I want to endorse Rav Shmuel Belkin. Then I want to deal with the Mashkiach, Rav Yaakov Meisher, a Kohen lesson. And then we all have to go to Mikvah. And we begin Hasidus in the United States, which leads us into the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And by the time I finish those Sheyurim, Yomo, your beard will be a lot longer. I have the greatest Talmidim in the world, as you can see. We meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya. Baruch Hashem. You don't know. Do you know the outsiders sitting there, the guests? Do you recognize anyone? That's
it's Reuben.
Reuben, you know.
I heard this guy who
was
from Washington Heights.
Washington Heights, sir. He still goes back. He has a mother living there. And Mark and Nora Watson are Olim from where? Tinek, you came? Tinek to Beit Shemesh. And that's Muri Tarragon, who was offered they wanted him to be an astronaut when he got his doctorate, right or wrong. And he also had to turn it down because of Shabbat and Kashrut. His father, his great-uncle, Morty, it's your uncle or great-uncle, Nathan Tarragon? Your uncle, Rabbi Nathan Tarragon. Remember, there was a Rav in the Bronx, a Hoshivara? That's his uncle.
Yeah, this is good for us to read.
It's very fascinating.
Yeah, because I eat kidney on Pesach. I'm Sfardi.
Night is Sfardi.
Sfardi, yeah.
Sfardi, yeah.
Ken, Nachon.
Kidney on Pesach.
It's the best thing ever.
Ask Rabbi Reuben, don't ask me. He'll solve your problem.
All right.
Baruch Hashem.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming. I didn't want Chaya to be the only lady here, so and Ulrich came. I'm happy. Baruch Hashem.